Brian Wilson.
Thank you very much. Joining us right now, KT McFarland, Fox News national security analyst. You can follow her on Twitter at KT McFarland, and you should, because you know what? You learn stuff. I do every day. Mm-hmm. Hey, good morning to you, KT. How are you?
I'm just great, guys.
All right, so the FBI was alerted to this bombing suspect in 2014 by his father. And apparently the FBI looked into it and didn't feel like there was any there, nothing that could cause them any concern or any heartburn. And apparently they quit following him. What goes on in a situation like this? I mean, it seems to me if your father turns you in and says, I'm worried about this guy, I think my son may be a terrorist, that ought to have some pretty heavy weight with the FBI.
You know, I think we need to take a major step back and say that in almost every one of these terrorist incidents, the warning signs were all there. Mm-hmm. Whether in this case the father turned him in other cases the Russians warned us about the Boston bombers, in the Fort Hood shooter, the co-workers were worried about it, they warned. In every single one of these cases, if you look back and say, oh my gosh, the warning signs were all there, what were we thinking?
Well, is it a situation where the FBI is under such strict guidelines about whether or not they can keep people on the terrorist watch list and what it takes to make that list that they don't really have any choice in the matter? I'm wondering.
Well, but then once you get on the list, you can't get off the list.
Yeah.
I just think we need to figure out what's going on. You know, the national security bureaucracy grew after September 11th, and it's sort of never been any order put to it. Now they're tripping all over each other, but on the other hand, they don't seem to have enough resources. If there's 16,000 FBI agents and there are 1,000 American bad guys that we already know that we need to be watching 24/7, that's not even counting guys like this. I think we need to have a different protocol. You know, things have changed in the last 2 years even, where we have the metadata, you know, scooping up large amounts of data, comparing databases to see what's the anomaly on this database, the next database, the next database, and we can zero in on a very small, relatively small number of people given our population, and let's watch them. It doesn't mean you arrest them, but it means you watch them. How does their behavior change? What are they doing differently? And I think that in this zeal for political correctness, where the administration will say, oh, yeah, if you see something, say something, but the minute somebody says something about a boy who brings the clock to school and they're worried about a bomb, that guy gets sued.
Right.
So, you know, or San Bernardino, where the people say, I was really suspicious, but I was so afraid of going out and saying something for fear I'd be called a bigot. So let's get our story straight. Do you see something and say something, and then it's okay if it turns out that you were incorrect? Or do you just keep your mouth shut, expect the professionals to do something, and then when these inevitable problems happen, after the fact, everybody feels guilty?
Yeah.
You know, we don't have enough law enforcement, FBI, or whatever, to watch all the potential bad guys. That's why you need citizens to be participants in this.
Amen, KT. Can I ask you about Syria and what in God's name is going on over there? Because we were told last week that John Kerry had negotiated a ceasefire with Vladimir Putin.
You didn't believe that, did you?
Well, and now, you know, you see all of this action going on over there. Russia and U.S. are pointing fingers and yelling at each other. What is the status of this war?
Look, that ceasefire was a mere photo op, and we paid big to get in the photo op. We're not controlling events in the Middle East. We're not even shaping. We're not even influencing events in the Middle East. Russia's influencing events. Iran's influencing events. Us? We're just sort of there for the photo op and to pat ourselves on the back that we're doing something when, in fact, what we're doing is very ineffective. So what happens in the Middle East? We don't know, and we can't determine what will happen going forward. I think that's the poison chalice that's handed off to the next president. And frankly, that's why I think Trump has actually been the right guy. Yesterday or 2 days ago, we met with Sisi of Egypt, and they talked about partnering in a plan that's not just a military plan, but it has ideological component, that it has an economic, that it has a regional aspect to it, all the stuff that the administration talks about doing but never does.
All right, so the president yesterday
at
the UN,
yeah.
I know you watched that speech with great interest.
With great agony.
We've had our own conversation about it this morning. I'd like to get your take.
I am so tired of being lectured to. And not only are Americans being lectured to, but now the globe. And I think it's on display was the president's worldview, which is shared by Secretary Clinton, which is shared by a lot of the mainstream media and the liberal left. And that's that America is not a force for good in the world. America pollutes. America consumes too much. America's too rich. America starts wars. And so therefore, the rest of the globe, if America just stepped back and we all followed some gauzy, hazy, kumbaya global world order, everything would be great. But it ignores the reality. It's like a parallel universe where everybody's going to be, you know, happy and good and not do ill to each other. Whereas the reality is that we've stepped back from world leadership, and now the Chinese want us out of the South China Sea. The Russians want us out of the Black Sea and the Baltics and Eastern Europe. The Iranians want us out of the Persian Gulf, and everybody, including North Korea, is pushing us around.
While he was in New York at the UN, he also addressed the refugee issue, specifically Syrian refugees, and called on the world to increase, and by the way, committed the United States to increasing the number of refugees that we take in. Can I ask a completely non-rhetorical question? I keep asking it, and I think people are just thinking that I'm being rhetorical for effect. What are the nations of the Middle East doing about the Syrian refugees? Isn't there a lot of room in Saudi Arabia, in Iran, in Jordan, in Egypt, and other countries? Why is Western Europe, Australia, and the United States of America and Canada, why are those the points of destination?
Well, let's take the moral aspect of it. I don't think it's moral to take people who are refugees from a different culture, who speak a different language, who have a different religion, who don't have a prospect of getting jobs, and putting them, forcing them into a society or a neighborhood that doesn't want them. I think it is far more moral, which is the implication of your question, and humanitarian, to keep people in the region. And not in tents and refugee camps, but build safe zones for them. Build schools, build hospitals, build cities. And then when their countries are eventually restored to them, they can return. But this solution where we're going to take in a bunch of refugees who don't speak the language, can't assimilate, don't have the same religion, are away from their homes and their families, can't get jobs, won't be integrated in the society, I think is just a recipe for disaster where everybody loses.
Yeah, but KT, they can't vote Democrat when they're in those safe zones in Syria.
All right, KT.
Thanks, KT.
We got to leave it right there. Always a pleasure, KT. Thank you.
Guys.